On Pilot TV this week, we are rocking out with the undead in the Vampire Lestat on BBC Two, hunting a female serial killer in Furious on Disney Plus, and trying to determine whether one young woman's hallucinations are a sign of mental illness or indeed a harbinger of the apocalypse in The Rapture on BBC One. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And joining me today are my two co-pilots, Boyd Hilton and Steph Seelan, who, as you'll recall, had to be forcibly separated at the end of last week's show, and after all that hawk ride-or-die business. And while it is unclear whether this situation is related to that particular altercation, Steph is still enraged as we begin this week's show. A fact I know, because she posted on the Pilot TV WhatsApp group and violated the covenant of the podcast by spoiling something and saying that one of the shows we're going to cover this week had made her so incensed, so maddened by it, that she was very, very angry indeed. We do not know which show that is. It could be one of three. I'm in my head have narrowed it down to two possibilities, but I'm excited to see which one has provoked your ire, Steph.
I'm still angry about it. Like, I'm still so upset about it.
I think it could be any of the three.
Boydie thinks it could be any of them, which is like, wow.
My exact words were, this show is absolute BS.
Yes. Annoyed, but not annoyed enough to swear.
No. God, it's so bad. Yeah. But we'll get into that.
Yeah, we're going to wait until the reviews section.
I'm so annoyed that my eyes have seen it.
God.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there'll be some weeks where it definitely couldn't be one or certain shows, but this week
it could be any of
specific reasons. Yeah, even though I'm not saying, by the way, that this is a bad week for TV shows, because they're all really interesting and different in their own way. But there's
Your
tastes.
Yeah.
I could see you taking against any of the three.
I can see her taking against reason. Two. Yeah. But look, we're going to get to it. This is going to be fun. We will find out
so
in the review.
That's so interesting, because actually I have taken against two, one more severe than the other.
Interesting.
I wonder if you'll figure out the one I haven't taken against.
Oh, this is very exciting.
I know.
What have you been watching this week that has not driven you to rage?
Well, I tell you, apart from the World Cup, which I think I'll get into with Boyd, because he's been watching the World Cup.
It is over. Yeah, it's over. And to the extent that I don't really need to. You can say whatever you want, obviously.
Okay. Well,
don't need to talk about it.
I watched the People's Final, obviously, which was delight, and I was very happy about it. But let me ask you this, okay? How many people do you think watched the World Cup final?
In this country?
Globally?
Globally. How many people?
First of all, let me say that the figures they put out for global viewing of anything, from the Super Bowl to the Oscars to wherever, it's always massively exaggerated.
Okay.
I remember them saying once, like, the Oscars watched by 2 billion people. I'm like, no, it was not.
Right.
You know. So with that caveat, you're saying global viewing of the World Cup final, how many people?
Yeah.
I would say FIFA's official figure is probably something like 1 billion. I don't know.
Right. Okay. So 200 million people watched the Super Bowl. 1.5 billion people
watched the World Cup final.
I don't think it's allegedly. They'd get to 1.5 billion.
But as I say, I still think those figures need to be treated.
How do you know?
Well, what they'd have to do is, I mean, we know what, in this country, TV ratings are officiated by a group called BARB, and they have...
Oh. Justice for BARB.
And they publish, you know, the official figures, and there's figures for overnight viewing and live viewing and blah, 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 blah. Mm. In this case, because it's a live event, it will be mostly, thankfully, live viewing. So each country, presumably, on the planet, has its own... way of measuring ratings. Its own way of measuring ratings. And I guess what FIFA should have done is tot up all of the different countries' ratings for the final. But never trust FIFA with anything like this. As we've seen.
Oh.
I mean, we've seen, haven't we, in this World Cup, more than ever, they cannot be trusted with anything. So that's why I just take it with a pinch of salt. But certainly, you know, yeah, it would be like, you know, if 14, 15 million watched it in this country, then how many countries are there? 200 countries in the world? Then you could do the math. You could sense that, yeah, a lot of people watched it.
I think this is slightly accurate.
Slightly accurate. Is it like saying most unique?
Yes, it is. I think it's most unique. Yes. So anyway, I've watched World Cup, but I won't labour on that point. So, right, I'm just going to give you the backstory. I started watching something. I'm just going to give you a slight backstory.
Okay.
So if, like me, you have a small child and they're on summer holidays and for some reason they don't understand that when they're on summer holidays from school, you're not also on summer holidays. Mm. Gracie's like, yeah, but you're off now. I'm like, no, I don't get sick. Summer holidays is not a thing that adults get. She doesn't understand it. So you have to ship your children around to various places. So at 8 o'clock on Monday, I was shipping her to her nana's house, right? And my mum was like, I got to my mum's house and she was like, are you okay? What's going on? Like, what is all this white powder on your nose? What's happening? Like, what is it? All right. And I was like, what do you mean?
Cocaine.
I had been eating milk bottles in the car on the way over, right?
Is that what you told her? That was your story.
So what Robbie Williams is saying about his famous...
It was milk bottles. I had some penny sweets.
But I'd they're covered in that powder. So I got it all over my face. And obviously it was 8 o'clock in the morning. So I was like, what is happening? Like,
this is a valuable lesson about your obsession with candy and sweets all kinds.
Okay. So, and yeah, just to say, like, and I have literally in my life never ever touched a drug. I don't drink alcohol. I've never smoked. I've never touched it. So I'm like the most
But you snort cup like milk bottles.
I love sweets. But I love sweets. It's my big vice, right? Anyway, there is a point to this story. So I was telling all the girls, because I'm in charge of Heat this week, and I was telling the girls about this, what this happened. And one of them said, I don't want you to be offended by this, but I just feel like if we all found out that you were taking cocaine at 8 o'clock in the morning, we'd all be like, That explains a lot. Right? Okay. So apparently this is like
at the World Cup final.
I would believe it. Yeah. Genuinely.
A little snifter first thing in the morning.
But I couldn't be so, like, I'm so far away from that. But I've never even tried a drug in my life. So
you
anyway.
Do have big coke fiend energy.
Right. Mm. So this leads on to the fact that I was like, why would you say that? And I'm like, because you're just so happy all the time. And you're like, what's wrong with you? Or like, you're so optimistic
about everything.
I feel it
would be a cocktail of like cocaine and like MDMA. Like definitely something going on.
I don't know. But leads LSD. Me to then out of nowhere, I was like, do you know what I'm going to start watching? Right? I'm going to start watching Pluribus because I haven't watched Pluribus, right? I was like,
how does this relate to the cocaine story?
So this relates to the fact is all about the fact that she is the most miserable person in the world. Yeah. And then everyone is like, so she's like the opposite of me and she's got to save the world from all the world's miserable people. That's how it leads into it. I was like, God, that's weird. I've started watching this and this has like happened this week. Anyway, oh my God, Pluribus is fantastic.
Isn't it?
It's so good. Now I'm really happy for myself that I get to watch the whole... Because there's 2 seasons, isn't there?
No.
Oh, I thought there was 2.
There will be.
They're making the second one.
Yes, because you were moaning about how long it would take.
Yeah,
it
was a massive gap because he has to write the fucking thing.
I am really excited because I love this. This is it's such an amazing premise. I love the whole thing so far. So it's absolutely brilliant. Can you hear that's my tummy rumbling?
No, it probably needs some more milk bottles.
Yeah,
probably
all I have got some eclairs in my bag. Anyway, so I watched that. So I'm on the Pluribus bus, so I will be enjoying that. And the other thing I watched, which I'm going to mention, and the reason before anyone shouts at me that I'm going to mention it, is because...
If it's the fucking Dallas Cheerleaders again.
No, I finished that. Oh God, it was absolutely sensational. I finished that now. It's so good. A lot of lessons to be learned there, guys. Right. The other thing I've watched, and I'm mentioning it, is because it is up for an Emmy in the TV movie category, which is why I'm mentioning it.
Okay.
Right. Hold on, because I wanted to see if Sally Field's going to get her Emmy. Remarkably Bright Creatures. Okay. Based on the Shelby Van Pelt novels, I believe. And it's about an aquarium cleaner who cleans it at night and her relationship with an octopus.
Yes, I remember.
So incredible. It's just, please, if you get a chance to watch a TV film, make this your destination. It is beautiful. It's got absolutely everything. I didn't think I could love an octopus as much as I love the octopus in this. And
is it a real octopus or is it a CG octopus?
No, it's a real octopus, but obviously I imagine they've had to get some CGI elements to it. And there's a specific scene where
it's a real Sally Field or is it CGI Sally Field?
It's a real Sally Field as Sarah Miller, and it's her at her best.
This is a valuable lesson in, because I remember when this came out, and we obviously ignored it because it's
a film.
Yeah. But things go by the wayside, you see. That's the problem. Like Heartstopper.
So what you're saying, what you are doing right now is you are rightly having a dig at the Empire podcast for not covering
it. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. It's like because where do you cover it? Then?
On the film podcast, because it's
except
a film.
It doesn't get coverage because they, you know, blithely ignore that kind of thing. So, for example, the Heartstopper...
That did get covered
on the Empire podcast.
Yeah, but very barely.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, very literally. Barely.
Well, I maintain
Helen
that we probably...
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I think Heartstopper, weirdly, was probably more our domain than theirs.
Yes,
because even though it is
saying.
A film, it's the end
it's
of a TV.
It was a TV show.
Yes, we're going to have to address this point.
Well, this is why I'm... Like, if this is not getting plugged anywhere, it's such a shame because it's magnificent, this film.
I think it's one of these things where it would have been covered on the Empire podcast if it had been a relatively quiet week, because we tend to look at the theatrical stuff
exactly.
And then
we
tend to look at streaming after that. Yeah. So we tend to prioritise theatrical releases.
Well, I think we need to have some kind of system where if you're not going to cover it on Empire, but it is going to be a magical film like this, then we give it a mention.
And sports events that we're not covering, maybe, you know, stuff that's on at the theatre, perhaps. Musicals.
Stage plays. We probably cover stuff on the theatre more often than we do feature-length TV movies.
We'd love a theatre
Anything else? Album releases?
Yeah. But... it really is worth. Have you seen it? Have either of you seen it?
I haven't seen it, but look, I have seen the trailer, and I remember. Oh. Yeah, no, I really want to see it. Yeah.
Do yourselves a favour. And the one thing I would also say, and I'm a sci-fi fan. I love any CGI. I love anything, but it feels like a nice break from that. It's just a very sort of simple, beautiful story. And if you don't love it, then you're basically dead inside.
Well,
and she doesn't get the Emmy, I'll be shocked.
She probably will.
She will,
because she's Sally Field.
Yeah. I also watch Minions and Monsters, but that's a film and it's an animation, so
it's supposed to be very good, though.
No, it's not. No.
Really?
It's been a bit of a flop, hasn't it? It's been... Because the previous ones were huge, and this one, I think, is one step too far for them.
No, but the last Despicable Me was dreadful.
Okay, I am a Despicable Me Minions aficionado, right? I have watched those films... probably each one of them about 50 times.
I'm so sorry.
No, I really enjoy them. I love them. I love Pharrell Williams. I love the soundtrack. I love everything about them. This was a huge disappointment. It takes too long to get to the monster. The monster's like halfway through the film. The third act's fine, but it's not what you want.
Any other films, Boydie, that you've seen?
Well, that's my film reviews for this week.
No, I won't give you my full review of The Odyssey, for example.
I think you kind of already have. Yeah, We've covered that quite extensively.
We covered it a bit. I mentioned it a bit in Plus as well. Anyway.
You finished. That's my
with
film
that
reviews
for bombshell
this week.
Film review.
Yeah.
Two film reviews, really, effectively. I'm sticking to TV.
Okay, go for it.
Just to be a good
purist.
He's a purist, yeah.
I'm a purist. So I finished two shows that we reviewed the first couple. DTF, St. Louis, I finished.
Okay, give us your verdict.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, what I would say is, I guessed the ending, who did it, so to speak. But that didn't in this particular case. And in fact, there's similar things. I would mention things like Mare of Easttown. Remember Mare of Easttown? I guessed the ending of that, but it didn't affect massively.
You guessed the ending of Mare of Easttown?
I did. I'm not. And this is about the two or three times in my entire life I've guessed the endings of things. By the way, I'm terrible at guessing.
I guessed the ending of Remarkably Bright Creatures.
Oh, okay.
And
it was the octopus, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I won't go into it.
So I did get, but it's so powerful, DTF St. Louis. It's really, really sad, tragic, poignant. And it has so much to say about stuff about kind of illicit behaviour, so to speak, illicit sexual behaviour and people's identities and what you're kind of forced to do in mainstream society to be regarded as normal, in quotes, normies. It's about normies and what's really going on in their lives. It's so interesting that had me thinking a long time after. It's kind of an indelible.
It lingered.
It's really that good. Yeah, it's going to linger.
Okay.
So everyone should watch it because it is brilliant.
How many episodes is it again?
Seven. Quite
seven,
weirdly.
Yeah, because I think I did three. Yeah, I did three. Okay, I've got to go back to that.
Yeah. So that was brilliant. I also finished The Dark, which we reviewed recently.
The one set that may or may not be set in Inverness, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Is it or isn't Inverness show, which... which we watched. I watched the first two when we reviewed it.
Yeah.
And was, it really keeps up the intrigue.
The intrigue.
Because the last 10 minutes are fantastic.
Yeah, of episode one, yeah. Right? Well, it really keeps up the intrigue as to what the hell is going on very cleverly. And it it kind of has various different parallel stories. But the main thrust, I didn't guess in this case, the mystery, who did it, who the serial killer is, it really is the central mystery. And it, I thought it was really clever. And it's a little bit stretching credulity, the explanation. The ending, but I went with it, and it's really good. I think it's one of the best. I mean, you know, everyone who watches 9 o'clock ITV dramas now, in terms of reviews, like whether it's us on this show or you know, other review shows are available, always talks about now. Oh, it's a bit. It's very ITV, but you know, that's just become a stat, which I think I'm going increasingly unfair because. The Doc, if it was on Netflix, and it could be, it's very well shot. It's got a style all of its own. It's very, funnily enough, it is very wintry and harsh and grey and, you know, stark with that use of the is it or isn't it Inverness landscape. next time an ITV, put it this way, next time an ITV drama comes up, I'm going to try my best to just forget about the fact it's on ITV, not mention it, and just address whether it's good or not. Because The Doc is really, really good. And it is a bit weird that it's been on in the middle of summer because it could not be less summary.
Oh my god! Here we go. You see what you've done, boy. You've fallen into a trap.
But that's almost like you saying that shows are seasonal.
Having watched The Doc, you're like, that is a very interesting decision to put it on in the middle of summer by ITV. And I think it's a good decision because once you're into it, it's so good that you forget about that issue. So I'm kind of like, I'm straddling the two theories. I think it's brave and bold to put it on because it's so stark and not summery. And yeah, at the same time, it's worked because I think it's really good to have a show like this on, in which is still in the middle of summer in this massive heat wave we're enduring. So yeah.
So do you agree with me or not? I can't. That's the point.
I agree with you. About the theory that some I agree that some show it feels odd that this show is on in the summer that I agree with
but it works for this show.
That's my point. And then you'll be pleased to know I've got my HBO Max sorted out because James
he's becoming incensed by this. I'm like, just leave him alone,
I haven't been able to watch HBO Max because I couldn't work out how to get the thing, the subscription sorted. It's partly because I've got my own subscription to TNT Sports, which is part of HBO. It wouldn't let me. It thought I was trying to log in from another country to see the base. I know.
But you don't have to explain yourself to me. Only to him, apparently.
I know. But, so yes, listeners, as well as the mystery of what show Steph didn't like, that's really hated this week, which went played out on WhatsApp. James also played out just telling me. Just sort out my fucking HBO Max.
I was trying to give you live technical support.
I know, but in the end, I just subscribed to the full Ultra HD package of 15 quid a month. It's fine. It's fine. I'm not complaining about
it. Just put it on the black Amex. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
And so I am fully, but I watched a couple more episodes of The Pit, but it's going to take me a while to catch up, I'm afraid, James. Okay. Maybe when you're back
This is going to be like we did a spoiler chat of Paradise on Lost Week's Pilot
Plus. I thought it was like a spoiler 10 minutes.
It was kind of a spoiler 10 minutes. We were desperately trying to remember what happened in Paradise because it was been so many months since it aired. We cannot have that at The Pit. We'd be like, right, brilliant. Let's talk about The Pit. What happened again?
All I can say, I mean, by the time you get back, I think I will have finished it from your extensive holiday, your outrageous
holiday.
Okay. Are you off for 2 weeks? Okay.
Two weeks. Yeah, exactly. Outrageous. So there's that. And finally, The Shards, which...
Yes, we did get screeners for that.
I've got all episodes. I've watched all 9 episodes.
You have?
I have.
But you can't say anything about it because it's embargoed.
Can't say anything about it. It's heavily embargoed.
Are we doing that next week?
Do you know, I think we'll have to be on Plus the following week because it's heavily embargoed until the day of release, I believe. What I would say is that... I can't even say that.
No, you can't.
This is
Bret Easton Ellis of American Psycho fame, my favourite novel of the last 5 years. One of my favourite novels of the last 5 years. And he's heavily involved, which I mentioned last time. We didn't know until it was announced, and he co-wrote the first 2 episodes of Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, and told us it was really good, so that's nice.
Yeah.
He really enjoyed it.
Yes, he really enjoyed it.
A show that he made.
Yeah. Although Bret Easton Ellis is such a maverick, he probably would actually admit.
Yeah, I made it. It's not really good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He probably would. 9 episodes of that.
How long are the episodes?
tested. They vary. Most of them are around an hour. There's a weird thing, actually. What I would say is that there's one episode that's a two-parter, right, on the official list of the episodes. And yet both parts are under half an hour. So it's not even an hour. And it's so that's a weird little wrinkle that is not a value judgment from me. So I think I can say that. there's also loads of interesting music.
That was always going to be.
Yeah. And loads of Ultravox featured heavily. Again, this is not a review. This is not a value judgment. Mm. And that's good. And because in the book, Ultravox particularly is a key element of the book. The song Vienna is a key element. How can anyone not want to watch it now?
You probably can't answer this. Is Kaya Gerber good?
You can't answer that.
Okay.
Yeah. Steph's making weird winking faces as if I'm gonna.
It's because I'm hoping she's good. I'm really hoping she's good in it.
No, I cannot reveal that.
Okay.
We will review it though. Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha.
So there we go. Yeah, I've managed to fit in.
Wow, you've done loads. Now that you're not watching football, you've you've done loads.
You're actually doing your job again, which is lovely. So that's nice.
Unbelievable.
I am genuinely pleased you've managed to sort out HBO Max. That is exciting.
Yes, so am
Hold
I.
on. Sorry, relief. It just feels like you haven't sorted out. You just took out a subscription.
Yeah, you just paid for it.
Yeah, no, but I've sorted out in the sense that I can now watch stuff on HBO Max.
Could you have just taken out the subscription 2 weeks ago when this started or not? I don't know why I'm doing this.
It's not that interesting. It's quite boring. Sorry. But basically, I tried to get the normal standard package. It wouldn't let me.
Right.
And I had
This is too much admin. Exactly. What have you done?
I'm so sorry. James, what have you been watching?
Oh, my God. Well, I'm just going to say we will do this Pitt spoiler special at some point.
Yes.
And we should say that we did do our Widow's Bay special. So it's a standalone Widow's Bay podcast on Pilot Plus now. Obviously, huge fans of that show, always have been. So that's good. If you want to listen to Widow's Bay, then do subscribe to Pilot Plus, which as this podcast goes out, this will be the first day of the slightly higher prices. So I hope those of you who wanted to fix at the old price managed to do so. But please subscribe.
It's a bit like Boyd's HBO drama, isn't it?
A little bit like that. We hope it's easier to subscribe to Pilot Plus. All right, so I'm going to take a different tack, Boydie, because I was going to do what you did. I was going to say, I have seen this show, but it's embargoed, so I can't talk about it. And that's quite annoying. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pivot. I'm not going to say what show it is. I'm just going to tell you what I thought about it.
Oh, this is more annoying.
Is it more annoying?
Yes, it is more annoying.
But can we guess it?
Well, I can't confirm it because then I'd be breaking an embargo.
Okay. Sorry, let me just get this straight in my head, right?
Mm. Yes.
You are going to tell us everything you think about a show and we're not going to know what the show is.
That is correct.
Yeah, that's definitely more annoying.
Is it?
Because remember, we had backup this week. We had in Pilot Plus, we're in the postbag section.
Yes.
Didn't we have at least one person, maybe more,
saying they think they like
it. Likes it when we talk about a show, we name it and we say we've seen it, and it's because they know what's coming. Whereas you're deliberately flying in the face of that and doing something more annoying.
People what they want.
Well, I've started down this path, so I feel I need to see it through.
Okay.
I watched all episodes of a show this weekend, which I'm not going to tell you what it's called. I watched all episodes, and I really enjoyed it at the beginning, and I enjoyed it less as it went on. And by the end, it was pure, unadulterated hate watch from top to bottom, and I was getting increasingly furious as I got through it, and by the end I was absolutely livid, but I did finish the whole thing, but I did not enjoy it, and I have many, many things to say about why I didn't enjoy it.
Why on earth did you finish it? Well, there must have been something about it that made you finish
it. Right, that is correct.
A mystery.
There was something about it. It's a show that I was looking forward to, and so I kind
of... Is it a brand new show or a second series?
I don't feel that I can reveal that information.
I think this has got second season. Anticipation. He was excited about it. He couldn't wait for it to come back, and it's absolute dog shit.
We will be reviewing it before long, so I will give you my. I'll unload with both barrels there.
But
I was upset.
Boyd would like, or that I would like.
It's unclear. Actually, I genuinely don't know. I genuinely do not know. Well, we'll find out.
Okay,
I'll be interested to see what you think of it. But I had issues with the plotting, the dialogue, the acting, the direction, the cinematography. I have notes about everything. No.
Second season.
Wait a minute. So how many episodes was it before you took against it?
I would say the shine had gone off the rose or whatever by episode three.
I'm saying second season, new showrunner, something's changed that you don't like.
It's that time travel alternate reality one, isn't it? Is it? Maybe?
Well, I can say that it wasn't that because I've already talked about how I've seen that previously.
So
it isn't Dark Matter.
Dark Matter, that was it.
Which I cannot say that I really enjoyed.
I feel like I feel like people need to write in, and the first person to get this show correct needs to get some sort of prize that we find somewhere around here.
I said nothing.
Okay.
Right. The other thing I have watched.
By the way, that was as annoying as expected.
Yeah. Okay,
do you know what? It was so annoying. It was so annoying. And so I'm sorry, listeners. It's probably even.
I was trying to do something different to Boyd. Clearly, that backfired horribly, but it is what it is.
I am intrigued.
All will become clear. And the people who need to know will know what I was talking about.
Oh, will they?
Yeah. Anyway, right.
Yeah, that's quite...
I also continue watching Lioness. I've now gone through the first... Really enjoying Lioness. It's really good. I'm enjoying like the sort of the embedded undercover drama. I'm enjoying the occasion... Because her team suit up and occasionally kick in some doors and shoot some people. So that's quite fun as well. And then you've got Zoe Saldana's character having her kind of home life problems with her daughter and her husband, played by your favourite from basically... Brothers and Sisters and Yellowstone. What's his face?
Hold on.
Your man. And it's good.
Have you watched the previous two seasons?
No, this is the first one. I'm watching the first season.
Oh, the first season?
I've started from the beginning.
Oh, is it Dave Annabelle?
Sure.
Dave Annabelle.
He's got this really like, I have to say, he is rocking his kind of iron grey hair and beard colour.
Oh, he is he is delectable. I'm wondering, Kay also loves him. I'm wondering whether, because I was always one of the things I was very upset about with Yellowstone is that he played the son Lee and he gets killed off in the first feature-length episode, right? And I always thought, oh, what a shame, because he's such a great character. And I wonder if it's because Taylor was like, no, I need you on Lioness.
Who knows? I don't know what the timeline is between those.
Mm.
But it feels like that character was always going to, you know, like he was written in to die.
Then I think what would have happened is they realised, oh, actually, he was a great presence in that show. But, you know, okay, he's in Lioness. I might stop watching Lioness.
Yeah, Lioness is fun. So having fun with that. And that's broadly speaking what I've been watching this week. Lioness, not a hate watch, just enjoyed it.
Hate watch?
Yeah.
What is this hate watch?
Mm, indeed. Okay, that is what we have been watching this week. Did you get the listener question that I forwarded on in the wee hours last night?
I mean, Steph replied to it, so you should...
Oh, did she?
Yes.
Well, I didn't know, because she'll have replied to the pilot postbag mailbox, which I do not monitor
once
a week.
I saw it, so she must have replied to...
Do you know what I did? I read the comments, and then I didn't actually look at the question.
Okay, good.
That's silly, isn't it? Okay. Right, hold on, I'm gonna look now.
Anyway, I will read out this week's listener question, which comes from Gary. And Gary says, for the record, I embrace the use of any... And oh, by the way, there's going to be swearing in this next segment. If you are currently in a car with a small child with sensitive ears who does not want to hear swears, you might want to skip this week's... Yes, you might want to skip this week's listener question because it's kind of swearing themed. Okay, and this is Gary's fault. Gary says, for the record, I embrace the use of any and all harsh language. In particular, Boyd's flamboyant casual cunting.
Wow.
But it got me thinking, what are the rules for podcasts and profanity? Is it just an uncensored free-for-all, or are there limits? Are certain terms considered more extreme? I guess the question came to mind from me thinking you guys had deliberately restricted using creative language more recently, or maybe that could just be a slow, gradual, natural consequence of Terry leaving the podcast. I bet Steph loves a good swear too.
I do.
Maybe that is the answer. Yet another positive from her addition to the crew. Either way, I for one am over the moon to have it back. Bonus question. What is your favourite swear moment on TV? For me, it will always be the late, great Isaiah Whitlock Jr.'s Clay Davis of The Wire and his trademark, shit. That or all the C-unit drops in Afterlife. Ricky Gervais is just a master of when and where to let rip, most notably to the little tubby schoolboy in Series 1. I've never seen a grown man call a young child a cunt before. I wonder if they had to remove the underage actor from set and use a stunt double... cunt double, to protect him. Any others? Keep up the good work. Gary.
Can I just say, I'm just going to explain, I did reply to this because I was feeling like you two do not swear hardly at all, and I swear all the time. I feel like I'm quite an aggressive swearer, and I was thinking, God, I think I swear too much. I'm a real potty mouth. And a couple of my friends said they couldn't listen to the podcast because they didn't want to listen to sweary Steph. But I was like, oh,
wow. Is this when you're coked off your tits?
Coked off my milk bottles.
His friends are very sensitive.
Well, they've got a small chance. They're like, we can't listen to it in the car, which we'd like to, because, you know.
I mean, you can't. I mean,
I know.
Yeah, the whole point of podcasts is you've got to have the freedom to.
Well, that's what I think. But I think you're the least sweary.
No one in the history of my life has ever accused me of being the least sweary person in any situation.
You're definitely the least sweary. You are a flamboyant swearer.
I appreciate that. I like to be.
To answer the first part of the question, there is, when I publish the podcast, there is a checkbox that you have to check for whether or not it contains explicit content.
Yeah.
I tick that every single week, just as a matter of course, because I don't think we have ever put out a podcast that didn't have a swear word in it.
No, you're
right. I mean, obviously, the quantity of swear words has varied wildly. Again, Terry not being on the podcast has brought it way down. Mm. But I always check that box as per Apple's guidelines.
Kay's not an unnecessary, like, she will only swear when it's necessary.
Because she swore off, ironically, swearing last year. So she tried not to swear.
She's always had a problem with the C word as well.
She's a lady. She's a proper lady. Yeah.
Whereas you are.
I am,
Coke-fueled.
I'm Coke-fueled today.
We try not to C-bomb on the podcast. And same on Empire as well.
I don't.
No, that's true. You are the worst offender when it comes to that.
That is definitely your word.
It's always in context for me.
Yes. Yeah. But I think that's the crucial distinction, is we do not casually cunt. Like, we do not drop it in anger.
No,
do you know what I mean?
We use it where
relevant to refer to a quote or a line or something.
So the answer to the question, going back to the question, the best use of swearing. This is difficult for me because I'm not supposed to. You know how James is banned from doing West Wing references and probably some other show. Friends, maybe Friends as well.
I'm
banned from Seinfeld and Curb.
True.
In this case, I have to be able to mention Curb because the episode in which they misspell the tribute to a late woman, and it's the beloved cunt episode, which is the misspelled beloved aunt, is one of the greatest TV episodes involving swearing of all time. And then there's, of course, the other classic episode, in which the whole series climaxes with a swear-a-thon, a massive swear-a-thon, due to one of the characters having a certain condition.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also a legendary swear-fest that can never, ever be beaten. And what I would say is that having seen Alley Cats, the Ricky Gervais
swearing cats
animated series coming soon, which we were reviewing soon, and we've interviewed Ricky for this very show, I said to him, I think it's that potentially must break the record for the amount of swearing in one show. It is extraordinary. Ricky's character, there's no sentence without the word fuck in it, for a start. Mm. And then there's a liberal use of cunt as well, as you'd expect from
liberal
Ricky.
Use of cunt.
That could well be the ultimate answer because it's so full of swearing. It's incredible. It's an amazing achievement. So yeah, I'm not, again, heavily embargoed. So I'm not judging it.
Okay.
I'm just saying that I can confirm it's potential record breaker in terms of swearing on television. And the other two I was going to mention.
Oh my God, you got loads.
Oh yeah, no, two more.
Go on.
Because I love this quote. This is like catnip to me. Logan Roy.
Yeah. Fuck off.
Fuck off. Just the fuck. That became iconic, properly iconic. And people come up to Brian Cox and say fuck off to him.
I can attest to this, that Boyd and I interviewed Brian Cox in the Electric Cinema in Notting Hill. And at the end of the interview, Boyd said, Brian, could you tell me to fuck off? I'm sure everyone does.
Yeah.
Wow. And he did.
He did.
And it was everything you dreamed it would be.
Oh.
Yes.
He loves it. Yeah. So yeah, that's it. And finally, The Thick of It. Remember The Thick of It?
Yes.
Malcolm Tucker.
Oh. But that was
legend.
Like the Shakespeare of swearing.
So this is my favourite one of all the many examples of brilliant creative use of swearing in The Thick of It. This is Malcolm Tucker, and the quote is, if some cunt can fuck something up, that cunt will pick the worst possible time to fucking fuck it up because that cunt's a cunt.
That
beats that.
Delightful. You do love the C-bomb. Do you know what my favourite one is? And I don't think we ever talk about this show enough. Friday Night Dinner, Paul Ritter, his constant shit hits
yes.
all the time. I love it. He's
classic.
Always wearing, but yeah, that for me, it, you know, when it becomes part of like the show, so integral to the show, RIP Paul Ritter. But yeah, that would probably be my
the
favorite.
The magic of that was that it was, he could have just been saying shit.
Yeah, shit
it. Shit it.
Shit it is. Shit is my favorite.
Yeah,
shit is my favorite.
That's a very good
swear
example,
word.
Yeah.
James? The correct answer to this question is everything uttered by Sheree Agdashloo in The Expanse. No one, and I mean no one, swears better than Sheree Agdashloo. And it's not just because she has that brilliant 1,000 cigarettes a day type, like gravelly voice, but her execution is peerless. And I think if you ever want to learn how to swear, she is your teacher. And it's brilliant because when it moved from sci-fi and it moved to Prime, like the swearing jumped up a notch as well. They were much more liberal with it. And it's a delight, an absolute delight.
I love the idea that someone wants to learn how to swear. I'm really going to like it's, you know, Duolingo or something.
Do you know, I do think there is a skill to the deployment of, like, you know, you talk about Peter Capaldi is a black belt in obscenity.
Oh, yeah.
Ricky Gervais, again, third Dan swearer.
Yeah, these are the giants of swearing.
Yeah, Shreyaq Dashlu, I'd say, is their queen. But yeah, it's definitely, it is a skill.
It is controversial.
But if we're being specific, that Isaiah Whitlock in The Wire is definitely great. But I, you know, it's that famous scene, isn't it? Where it's Bunk and it's McNulty and they're at the crime scene and they just say fuck. That's the only word they use for the entire duration. It's just like fuck, fuck, fuck. And it's just that word repeated. And it's just that I think is absolutely wonderful. Also what David Milch did in Deadwood with...
Ooh, that's such a good one. I really wish that was mine.
With Ian McShane, because what's really interesting is because the kind of swearing they used back then, which were things like tarnation or gold darn it, it would have sounded weird. So he deliberately employed modern anachronistic cursing in it. I mean, the use of cocksucker is legendary in Deadwood. But it's true, but it averages 1.5 fucks per minute in Deadwood, apparently.
Oh, I'm so jealous that you researched that so well. That's such a great answer.
And I think, again, it's the masterful. Ian McShane is masterful.
Totally agree.
As Al, the ironically
Deadwood.
Named Al Swearingen. Mm. The other thing I would point out is when they substitute swear words, which I think can be done quite well. On Battlestar Galactica, frack became the swear word of choice. And I think that's used quite well all the way through, because obviously you can't really be swearing on network television. No. That's fine. But actually, if we're talking about that, The Good Place, Holy a Mother Forking Shirt, balls, like all of that, the idea that they were in heaven. So when they swore, the divine powers changed it to another word. And I thought that was a really interesting way of getting around it, because you knew what she was saying, but she didn't actually say it.
Well, you know, let me bring up your favourite show and mine, which is Mrs. Brown's Boys. Because, of course, in Mrs. Brown's Boys, to start with, they would say feck. Instead of fuck all the way through. And it was feck.
But that's Irish.
No. Yeah, it was partly Irish, but it's also... But then, I don't know when the specific moment was. Kind of halfway... Once it's become like the biggest comedy on TV, which it was at one particular moment, then they just gave up saying feck and they just started saying fuck. And basically, the whole show was like full of fucks. So it all went out... It went out 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock on BBC One. But it was an unleash a fuck fest. And he just stopped saying feck at all.
Well, I'm sad that they stopped saying feck, because I have an Irish mother-in-law and literally every second word she says is feck.
There you go.
You know, it's not like the Irish word feck is not a substitute for fuck. It's a completely different word.
No, exactly. I know, but that's what. But I mean, like,
but in the case of Mrs. Brown's Boys,
you can like.
Oh yeah, and I think usage-wise, it has become. But by all accounts. And I just Googled it. As a standalone noun, feck traces back to 15th century Scotland as a shortened form of effect, meaning value, vigour, or the majority of something.
She definitely doesn't use it like that.
No.
She says
Brown.
Feck off all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think its common usage has changed.
The other honourable mention I want to give, Game of Thrones gives good swears at times, but my favourite is Jerome Flynn as Bronn, who drops swear words absolutely fabulously. There's one bit where he's talking about Joffrey and he just goes, "There's no cure for being a cunt." And I was just like, that is brilliant. Just his, again, masterful deployment.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think swearing in a northern accent is nicer.
Better.
Yeah. It doesn't sound so aggressive.
Yeah. Maybe.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm. I'm not sure if I agree about that. It's a good, interesting theory.
Well, Boyd, we're entering our era of you not agreeing with anything I say, so it doesn't surprise me.
Well, we'll see. We'll see when the bombshell of your most hated show arrives in the review section.
I enjoy TV more when they're swearing.
Oh, yeah, same.
Enormously.
I mean,
more.
I enjoy life more when they're swearing.
I think so too, because like swearing at its very base, it's an intensifier, isn't it? It conveys intense emotion and it's inherently dramatic.
One more thing about the Ricky Gervais thing. When I interviewed Ricky, it's a delight. I punch the air moment when I interview him and he does a swear. So he talks about, in the interview, which you'll hear in a couple of weeks' time, he talks about things that annoy him, and he talks about how sometimes you get some fucking cunt will be filming you and when you're acting out in the restaurant, I'm like, oh my god, Ricky's just said some fucking cunt, and I was like, yeah, punching the air. So yeah, look forward to.
Well, you'll hear that next week.
It's weird though, isn't it, swearing? Because I feel like I try, like, I know what you mean. It does sort of enhance life in general. Mm. But you know how you just don't, like, you try and keep swearing away from children for so long.
Also, like, do you not find, like, so I like, I love swearing, but when I hear a child swear, like, I hate it. Like, it freaks me. I'm all for parents. The parents.
I know. Like, I literally am like, we never have anything on with swear words. We keep Gracie totally away from. And then the other day she came home from school and she was like, Ava's told me, Mummy, what the F word is. And I was like, what? What are you talking about?
And you're like, what a C-unit.
And I was like, oh God, no. I was like, okay, well, don't worry about it. And she was like, I can't believe I know what it is. And I know this word anyway. And I was like, okay, Gracie, do you want to say it? Do you just want to say it? Get out of your system. And she went, fudge. And I was like, what? She said, I didn't even know it was a swear word. Why is it a sweet? And I was like, oh my God. So she thinks that the F word is fudge.
That's genius.
That's brilliant. There's a brilliant column by John Ronson, the writer John Ronson once.
Right.
He used to do a weekly column, I think, in the Guardian Observer. And one of them was about how dealing with his son, finding about the word cunt.
Oh.
And it was a hilarious thing about how he lied to him about what it really means, or this, that, and the other. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so what? Because that's what I did. I was like, yeah, it is. And just, like, try not to say it too much. You know, just try not to say it again. Because I obviously don't want her to know the word fuck now at 7. But yeah, it's mad.
As if she doesn't already.
She thinks it's fun.
Is there a massive disconnect between what parents think their children know and what they actually know in the playground? She probably
don't. Oh, God. No, I can't bear it.
She walks up to her little friend and goes, motherfuckers! And throws her arm around them.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because you're like, spend so much time being like, don't swear. And then when you get older, everybody swears. It's inevitable.
Like, she's like, my fucking mother's on coke.
I know, she had it all over her face taking me to school this morning.
Oh God.
Anyway, that was this week's listener question. If you would like your question addressed on this particular podcast, and after that, why wouldn't you? The email address is postbag@pilottvpod.com. And if you have other things you want to talk about, then send them in. We do address many, many more things on Pilot Plus in the postbag. So, send them in. We want to hear from you. Okie dokie. Right. I think it is time for us to look at the news headlines. Steph, what have you found in the world of news?
Well, so did you see that Colin from Accounts, they've announced that the third season is going to be the final season. They did a really nice kind of Instagram thing.
This doesn't surprise me, given that I own one of the props and they were auctioning them all off. So,
oh, yeah, that's a good point.
If they had been doing another season, they'd have asked for my cat back.
They probably would. You know. Yeah, which I feel sad about, but they did a really nice little bit on Instagram where they talked about it being over, and they just were saying that they think that the characters, you know, that the arcs have come to the end and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's
I don't think
gone.
It's a bad thing. Like quit while you're ahead.
I agree. New RoboCop series is coming to Prime Video, which I'm very excited about. I love RoboCop. Are you excited about that?
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Oh, it's eight episodes. How exciting is that? Do you not care about
the Joel Kinnaman RoboCop film? Was not good.
Exactly.
No. I'm a pure RoboCop.
Yeah, you're
purist.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I forget that happened.
Well, that's an example of a bad RoboCop thing.
Yeah.
And the original obviously is a great RoboCop.
Peter Weller.
Yeah, but
genius.
You have to be. I don't know. Semi skeptical.
Peter Weller once gave me a classics lesson.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
He's massively into classics, and I believe he lectures in it at university.
Wow.
But I was he was in Sons of Anarchy. You remember this? He was in Sons of Anarchy as the corrupt police officer. When I was on set of Sons of Anarchy, for whatever reason, he sat me down and talked at me about classics for about 45 minutes.
I would have enjoyed
that. It was fascinating.
Yeah, I would have really enjoyed
that. Yeah, he's really good.
Wow. So Peter Ocko is going to be exec producer, showrunner and writer on the series, which is going to premiere exclusive. He is from Lodge 49 and Pushing Daisies.
Oh, yeah.
Pushing Daisies, great show. Brian Fuller.
So it's going to follow the franchise's premise, which is good. That makes me happy.
I mean, I'm surprised it's taken this long, to be honest.
Yeah,
to do
me
a RoboCop
too.
Film.
Me too. There must be a reason behind that RoboCop series. It's
maybe.
It's eight parts. Yeah. Eight part series.
You're very excited about the eight parts, aren't you?
Yeah, because I think that you know, that's a good, eight is good. 10 is too many quite a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Eight is a good number.
Sometimes.
Nine is a strange number.
It is a strange
number. Why would you ever do nine? I think
the chance
eight
is nine, unless. No, I can't. Unless there is a tenth that I don't know about.
Oh, that would be interesting. Okay, I don't want to start a fight, but I will just say that Will Ferrell's The Hawk is number two on Netflix charts.
That's no indicator of quality.
Exactly. I mean,
well, it's an indicator of how many people are watching it. So
no, I mean, judging by Netflix's metrics, it's an indicator of how many people walked into the same room where it happened to be playing, maybe on a screen on someone's phone.
I mean, I said I didn't want to fight. And
to be honest, even if it is, even if everyone in the world watches it, doesn't attract it, it's utter shit.
I watched a couple more. Okay, based on the fact that I said, you know, if you love Will Ferrell, you love it, and I maintain that if you like Will Ferrell, this will not be
awful for you. It is awful for me. It makes it worse for me because I really like him. It's like when someone you really like makes something that bad, it's painful. It adds to the pain. If I didn't give a shit about him, then that would be fine. But that's the worst thing about it. Anyway, but yeah, by the way, the show, the mystery show that you hate this week.
No spoilers.
Do you prefer The Hawk to that?
Yes.
I would
watch The Hawk for 24 hours.
Wow.
Straight.
Wow.
Rather than that show.
You said on Pilot Plus last week, by the way, that you were gonna talk to us about Ride or Die that you've been watching, and you didn't mention that in what you've been watching.
Well, no, because what I wanted to talk to you about Ride or Die is the fact that what I've been seeing is that a lot of female reviewers have been getting behind Ride or Die and saying it's brilliant. And several people have contacted me via the Instagram, my Instapilots, to say they loved Ride or Die. All girls, all the ladies. And I think that the crux of this leans heavily towards females. It's got a lot of jokes geared towards females. And this is a female show for women to enjoy. And it's not for you, Boyd. And so my point is, it's not that it's not good, because it is brilliant, but it's just
brilliant's
not for you.
Quite a strong
big word.
You were on my side.
I still think it's good, but I think brilliant might be overselling it.
Brilliant. Anyway.
Brilliantly entertaining.
Okay.
Back to news.
Right, so... Go on, yeah.
There's just news with Steph this week. Yeah.
I finished my news.
No, no.
I have one.
I've got the best headline.
Oh, okay. Well, then you go.
Because this week's outstanding Variety headline involves your two's favourite show.
Oh, yes. I know what it is, because that was my other piece of news.
Ed Harris.
Yes.
Ed Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Felt, quote, misled by Dutton Ranch about inconsequential role... colon, get me the fuck out of here.
Yes. Yeah. I cannot...
This is the greatest news story of the week.
I
easily,
can't quite
possibly
believe...
of our lives.
Do you know what it's based on? Okay, so it's based on the fact that he was told he was one of the main four.
Sorry,
go on. You go.
No, you just hijack it. It's fine.
Ed Harris, at the Monday night premiere of Apple TV's The Dink, which is a made-for-TV film, by the way, which is, I don't know if she's going to review it on Empire
we'll
or Pilot.
That.
We are reviewing it.
He revealed that he felt misled about the importance of his role in the Yellowstone spin-off, and halfway through filming season one, he was telling his team to get me the fuck out of here. Prior to signing on for it, I was talked to quite a bit about what the season was and what my character was going to do, and that I was one of the four main characters, Harris said, and that really wasn't the case. Spokespeople for Paramount, series creator Taylor Sheridan and 101 Studios did not immediately respond to Variety's request for comment, and nor did Steph and James, who are the cheerleaders of this frankly outrageous show that's treated Ed Harris like a piece of shit.
I think, but he has signed up for season two, and also he thinks they're going to right the wrongs. That's what he's kind of said. He said, what really pissed me off, to tell you the truth, is the first episode or the second, they told me before I got to signed on that you get to sing in the bar and they cut it. And that for me is the greatest thing about this. There was a scene where Rip tells him to go up and sing and they cut that scene. And that's the thing that's upset him the most about it.
I mean, fair enough. He is scary. Ed Harris is a scary figure.
He's terrifying.
As anyone who's seen Westworld will attest, he is terrifying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you cross the Harris, it could be over.
I think Taylor Sheridan's making out to him. I wouldn't worry about it.
I think it's fine.
But, yeah, I'm really surprised at how publicly crazy he's gone about this.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
It
is. He doesn't give a shit. Yeah.
It feels like a nothing to lose.
But it's like a Taylor Sheridan is the same. Taylor Sheridan says what the fuck he wants.
That's true.
Paramount and the owners of the network. And
but Taylor Sheridan's not directly involved in Dutton Ranch, so we won't get a riposte from him.
That's true. He's not.
I've got another funny headline. This is from Jacob Elordi. And he said, Jacob Elordi spent 2 days locked in a coffin with a real snake for Euphoria death. : Sam Levinson brought me back to torture me. If you've sat through Euphoria season 3, as I did.
Your favourite show.
You will know that sequence, which is pretty unbearable to watch.
2 days?
Yes. It's a lot, isn't it?
That's method gone mad.
Fucking insane. Yeah. And it's really not worth it because it's a terrible scene.
Oh.
Terrible way to die.
The biggest news of the week was, of course... especially in the wake of the Odyssey, in which, when Telemachus goes off on his little mini quest, he is accompanied by the ghost of Sparta himself,
Kratos,
god of war. Yes, we can say this because he's in the film. It's fine.
Okay.
Because it's Ryan Hurst, who was playing Kratos in the God of War TV show. He is no longer playing Kratos. He has left the show due to an injury. And there was lots of speculation that actually, is it because people, you know, remember the first image from God of War came out and people did not go well.
Is he the bearded guy?
Yes.
Yes.
People did not like him.
Yeah.
But this has nothing to do with that. Apparently, he, from what I understand, he tore his bicep really badly. Oh. And it's a really nasty injury. And that's why they had to pause production. But actually, he's now out of the show. So they're now going to have to look for a new Kratos, which means they'll have to reshoot the two, I think it's two, or is it four episodes they've already shot, and then continue. But I'm saying this is an opportunity. Chris Judge, make it happen. Chris Judge is the one and only Kratos, and he is the one that they should bring in to replace Ryan Hurst. Ryan Hurst, of course, is great. He was a good choice.
Yeah.
But Chris Judge is the OG Kratos.
Just because he burst his bicep, ripped his bicep, does that really keep you out for that long?
Yeah, apparently, it's quite upsetting.
That's lifting. Pretty bad.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't imagine it was, I've pulled a muscle. I think it was probably something quite major.
Okay.
So, yeah. But Chris Judge is Kratos. Let's make it happen.
Okay, hold on. I'm just going to... I don't think I know who Chris Judge is.
So Chris Judge, who you will, of course, know him from Stargate SG-1, where he played Dilk.
Oh, God, definitely.
But crucially,
yes.
He does the voice of Kratos in the recent games.
Well, then he should 100%.
And he has the most amazing kind of rumbling, bassy voice.
Yeah.
And he's just
I know
fantastic.
Exactly who it is now.
So 61. I would love them to use it. And also, he's supposed to be old in this. Like, he's supposed to be an older Kratos.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
Okay.
I think he'd be fantastic.
Is there a groundswell of support for Chris Judge doing it, or is it just
I would think so. I don't imagine I'm alone here, so we'll see.
No. Okay.
Maybe I am.
You've been alone before.
Yeah, it's true.
That is true. Yeah. That is true.
Right. Any other news?
No.
No? We've exhausted news, for now, anyway.
Oh. Yeah.
No, it's fine.
Boyd considered making something up, but we're going to move on. Okay.
Outrageous.
Let's move on to this week's reviews, and otherwise known as Spot the Show that Steph Hated. Okay? Right, and we're going to begin this week with The Vampire Lestat, which comes to BBC Two just after it finished on AMC in the US. This is at once the third season of Interview with the Vampire, while simultaneously being the first season of The Vampire Lestat, because the series has had something of a kind of a soft reboot here as it moves on from the first book in Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles, Interview with the Vampire, to the second book, The Vampire Lestat. So it shifts perspective from Louis to Lestat, but it also, in the TV show at least, has pivoted from a kind of gothic romance to more of a camp glam rock satire. So the Vampire Lestat, the character here, fantastically played by Sam Reed, has developed a thing for performing in tight leather trousers, in addition to the blood drinking and the, you know, historical reminiscence. And this, like the previous seasons, has been lauded since its US release. But the question is, did we love it here? So, Boydie, did this particular vampire show suck?
Lauded by who?
Well, it's got 98% okay. on Rotten Tomatoes. It is storming it on your favourite, Boydie, Metacritic. And it has been hailed as not just the best season of the show so far, but as one of the boldest reinventions of a series in recent memory.
Big words.
So, yeah.
I enjoyed it.
How many did you watch?
Only one. I enjoyed it. But, so it's very, I like the original series as well. I'm not as much as you did.
No,
but
I think it's wonderful.
They did a really good job.
So, I'm sorry. The two seasons before this, you thought, wonderful.
Yes.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Five stars.
I gave it five stars in Empire Magazine.
Is that a clue?
Five stars. Just to be clear, that's the most stars
that's
something
the
can
most
get.
Stars okay. something can right. get, yes.
Wow, that's interesting. You're already...
Do you think we've got a winner, Boydie? I don't know, we'll see.
Maybe. The TV series was I think they did a really good job of, because I remember we've had this sort of the film. I think the film was massively disappointing considering, you know, Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise.
I think it's good, but it's fine. Ironically, it's a bit fangless.
It's fangless because it doesn't really address the sexuality.
No, it's a queer romance, and they really kind of shelved that because it was
and when the TV series went full on into the sexuality, and which you are reminded of, we are reminded of as viewers of episode one of this new season. with extended flashback kind of montages to the music of the band that Lestat is cobbled together. In fact, the scene where he joins the band is actually hilarious, where basically he hears across the way from where he lives.
He goes full Larry David.
And he storms in, grabs the guitar, smashes it, and then starts playing with them, as you do. And they're all like, oh, what's going on here? That is a very funny scene. Now, whether it's intended to be that funny, I'm not sure. And this is the question I have a bit of a James style genre kind of classification tonal shift issue.
There's a big tonal shift here.
It's a big tonal shift because there are elements of this first episode. I mean, it's got Eric Bogosian is back, and I quite like the way. So he's the whole original series was framed as is in the book by it's as an interview with the vampire. It's literally being interviewed by this writer / journalist. Played by the great Eric Bogosian, who, by the way, is a proper hero. He's a fantastic actor and comedian back in the day.
Such a shame he was in this.
Legend. it's all coming out now.
You're jumping the gun.
Things are starting to come clear. So I quite like the clever way they introduce him in this show. I quite like the beginning where there's these elaborate, it's like a big kind of like weird auction going on. And I thought that scene was quite interesting and kind of visually arresting. So I kind of enjoyed it mostly, and the whole shift towards it being about a kind of modern day David Bowie / Mark Bolan / that character
/
Ewan McGregor played in that film where he wasn't David Bowie but he was David Bowie, I thought that was all interesting. But you know, the big problem for me was
everything.
I didn't hate it, interestingly, because clearly you did, which we'll get to in a second. I didn't hate it at all. But the big problem for me, and I think the big mistake they made, is having so much of the fucking music. And I've used the word...
No auto-tune as well. They deliberately made Sam Reed just carry it.
It's painful. The music is shit.
I mean,
it's driven me to swearing more than I normally would in the review section.
I think they've released an album.
Have they? Oh my God. Honestly, it's terrible. It's irritating. He can't sing, so he does this kind of annoying speak-talk singing, which is just irritating. They have too much of it. There's one bit halfway through, there's quite a long bit of it early on, and then about halfway through, there's fucking a whole song. You know, this is not good. And what kind of person, unless you're a devotee of this show, as James is particularly, and clearly lots of its fans who elevated it so high in Rotten Tomatoes and whatever, Metacritic. But for a normal kind of person interested in the show, quite liked the original novel on which this was based, and would carry on watching it, don't put a whole fucking terrible song in the middle of your first episode and expect me to carry on watching it through that misery and worrying that there's more songs like this, especially now you say there's a fucking album of it as well, in the rest of the series. It's a real turn-off. I don't think you know, for the casual viewer or for the semi-casual viewer, I think they should have got rid of those fucking songs. All we need to see is 10 seconds of them maximum, and we get what kind of pop star he is, and we understand that. But yeah, it really ruined it for me, the music element. The rest of it I thought was fine and decent, but I'm intrigued to know why Stephanie Seelan clearly thinks this is so awful.
Do you know what ruined it for me? Every single second I had to watch it.
Wow.
You
must be surprised, James, because I bet you didn't think that was...
I genuinely did. So initially, I thought it's this one, and then I thought it was a different one.
Yeah.
No. But, I wasn't going to say it was this.
I think this is the worst television show that I have ever seen. in my life. And I'm just going to list some of the things I hate about it.
Is the hook number two?
No, it isn't. Okay.
It should be.
It's got loads of devices that I absolutely despise. Text speak on screen, fucking hate it. I absolutely get it.
Do you mean text appearing on screen?
But that's
screen.
Like every show does that.
No. I've got a long list. Don't worry. There's other things.
Okay.
Breaking the fourth wall, which is not my bag at all. And especially breaking the fourth wall when you're a terrible fucking shit vampire who's heading up a... Yeah, he talks directly. Doesn't he?
No.
Yes, he does.
There's a narration.
No, by which there's way too much of course.
No, there's points where he really... there are points where he was talking to me and I wanted him to stop.
I don't remember that happening.
Okay.
Because you hear him talking to you, because the whole idea, like the device here, is he's not being interviewed, but he has essentially narrated his whole life on and had it like pressed into vinyl, called it The Failure. So you hear him essentially reading aloud from the chapters of his life.
But he doesn't look to camera and speak.
He does. He looks to camera when he's in the apartment. He looks to camera. I'm going to find that bit.
Okay. We'll take your word for it. Okay.
Right.
But even then, you didn't like Fleabag.
No, Fleabag is something different entirely, but let's not go from a great show.
I'm going to interrupt every single one of you. How many have you got?
Okay, so, yeah, showing text chats, okay. Breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah,
All of the singing. We're fairly aligned on that. All of the terrible singing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The whole kind of like mockumentary Spinal Tap, this is Spinal Tap element to it. It's so, I don't understand who the fuck this show is for. It's like 1 minute he's doing the, like, you know, it's just so bad. It was like an assault, like just all of the lights and the noise. It was just an assault on my senses. I hated every fucking thing about it. It's like, you know, that scene in Silence of the Lambs where Bill is down and he's doing that sexy dance. I was going to mention
Silence of the Lambs because this guy does look weirdly like him.
He looks weirdly like him.
Which is unfortunate.
What, Ted Levine?
Yeah,
he looks like Ted Levine. Sam Reed.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. He does.
I mean, they've both got long blonde hair, but
he's got a weird accent as well, which doesn't help.
Like, well, he's French.
Well, okay.
the vampire sex scenes are also like, they're just not, there's nothing sexy about them. Like, and we've seen some great sex
scenes. How many episodes did you watch, by the way?
Oh my God, I watched one episode and I was so upset.
There were montages really of previous vampire sexes, weren't there? Was there actually a new vampire sex scene?
There's definitely, I can't remember if it's in episode one, but there's a sex scene in a lift scene.
There's a sex scene in the lift.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Am I supposed to find this funny? It's not funny. Is this supposed to be like a mockumentary? It's shit. Like, the singing's terrible. It has no redeeming features whatsoever. All of the actors are awful. They're all awful.
Eric Bogosian's awful.
Yes, and he's the one person I feel so sorry, and he needs to get the fuck out of that show immediately, because
like Ed Harris in Doug Ranch.
Honestly, he seems lost in it. He's like bewildered in the show. He honestly looks around as if like, what the fuck am I doing? I should never, like, my agent shouldn't have got me into this. This is awful. Like, even like, there's a scene where he's in a corridor with a load of other vampires, and the other vampires are rubbing. Like, just all of it's so nauseatingly crap. I just, like, there's no, wow. It's like the story is terrible. Like, oh. Or just never, just don't
98%
watch it.
On Rotten Tomatoes. I'm
completely bewildered, because I do not understand what anyone likes. But I mean,
have you seen the previous seasons at all? Any of them?
No, thank God.
So they're very different. Like, the tone is not even in the same place.
Well, I'd assume so, because if they were like this, it wouldn't be a third season, would it? If they were, it just wouldn't.
Okay, for those of you watching on YouTube, I have genuinely no idea why the Pilot TV branding in the studio has been replaced by Pete Wicks.
It's quite funny, though, to have Pete Wicks overseeing Steph.
Yeah.
He looks a bit vampiric. He could be in Interview with a Vampire.
Perhaps it is the vampire stuff.
He's probably got the acting skills to be in it.
I don't know why Pete Wicks, man-made, is now what's behind you, but we're going to have to roll with this, because there doesn't seem to be any way to fix it. But anyway, for those of you listening, you won't notice it.
The other thing I just want to mention is, do you know what I was like? I was like, God, this is just like someone thought, oh, The Darkness should make a show and we should add some fucking vampires in
it. Well.
And then just add like some jokes that aren't funny in it, and everyone will watch it.
I think that if it didn't have that extended use of the music in this episode, you wouldn't hate it so much.
Oh no, I would. The dialogue is just shit.
I forgot to say, you reminded me. There was something. Sorry, listeners.
It's gone mad.
I don't know what has happened to the studio. Again, if you are watching this on YouTube, I don't know what's going on.
It's like we've been taken over by.
Yeah, the vampires are really upset with me. That's what happened.
They've got special powers. I forgot about the overextended narration. Now, I'm with you there. Funnily enough, there's another show coming up that I've seen that's heavily embargoed, that has a massive amount of narration with it, also adapted from a novel. And I do think it's a mistake with shows like this to rely so much on voiceover, whether he breaks the fourth wall or not. There's so much voiceover that you're telling us everything that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And we need to see that for ourselves. And I know in this, because it is literally Interview with a Vampire, so the framing device that he's being interviewed sure, that's fine. But to have him droning on and on and on and on at us is a real letdown. So
the two things, because I
forgot to mention that narration. The narration and the music, both I thought were a massive turnoff. But I have to say, I am stunned that this is the show you hated so much. Like, I'm just thinking of... like our disagreements, like Hawk, which is a grotesque monstrosity of a comedy that I would consider way worse than this. In terms of the classic, you know, for me, I judge a thing on what's it setting out to do and how well does it achieve it? The Hawk is setting out to be funny and it disastrously doesn't. And I'm only going on about it because for me, this, it's setting out in this weird new turn for this show, for Interview with a Vampire, to have this character become a rock star. It's kind of an interesting idea, actually. And I quite like, you know, their depiction of it, of trying to dramatize this notion that this guy somehow becomes a rock star with his band and everything. It's just the way they've done it in the end I found quite irritating. But there are a lot of elements of it that I was entertained and interested by.
Really?
So I am kind of amazed that this is the show that you've really taken against.
Interesting is such a byword for... it's when something's shit, but you don't want to say it's shit.
This could be Steph's Widow's Bay moment. That's all I'm saying.
No, it isn't.
It could be. This is so bad.
Like, right, I'm judging it on right. It was such an assault for all the reasons on my senses. There was nothing enjoyable about this show, and I will watch anything. I just found it so unenjoyable and unentertaining. Like, it was just not, it didn't entertain me on any level. The music, like I say, the music, the narration, visually, I wasn't entertained. Even like the scenes with vampire fights, that's something that I would generally quite like, oh, that's quite fun. I thought they were terrible. The sex scenes, awful. I just, all of the dialogue is shit. There's only one line that I enjoyed, and it came from, what's his name, the guy who's doing the interview, and he was talking about wanting to win an Oscar, and he says, I want to be shining my Oscar and slapping Chris Rock in the face. And that was the one thing I thought, oh, that's quite fun, you know.
Yes. That was topical.
There's a
topical reference really early on, isn't there, to MAGA. To Make America Great Again, almost in the opening line or opening paragraph. So which I thought was interesting to remind you that this is taking place in this year, like it's taking place now. And yet
Don't you find his voice really...
like, oh, his voice is terrible. I have to admit, if they're cast...
come to me.
I agree with you to the extent... I don't agree with you about the show in general, but if you're going to have a storyline in which your main character becomes a rock star... get him to be able to sing, at least. Yeah, I think that is a flaw in the whole plan.
Get him to be interesting.
Not all rock stars can sing, to be fair.
That is true.
And he's not he's a massive star at this point.
Oh, yeah, that's true,
isn't it? You have to bear that in mind as well.
But he does become a massive star, does he?
Well, that would be a spoiler.
He must do, wasn't it? Otherwise, what's the point?
Well, there's a lot going on. So we should say, this is weirdly, certainly in the way it's framed, loyal to the books, because the vampire Lestat does have him as a rock star, and he is the brat prince. Like, when you remember the Interview with the Vampire, Lestat's kind of the villain of that story.
Yeah.
And it's from Louis's perspective. And when Anne Rice wrote the vampire Lestat, she shifted her sympathies towards Lestat. And you get, as part of this, a retelling of the events of Interview with the Vampire, but from Lestat's point of view. And he has a very different take on it to Louis, which is quite fun. What they have done here, which is perhaps unusual, and which some people, I genuinely think, maybe not have quite the strong reaction as you did, Steph, but the tonal shift is immense. To go from a quite serious, romantic, gothic feel to what does occasionally feel a bit Spinal Tappy. It's kind of like a slightly satirical look at rock and roll. And he is very over the top. Mm. And all of those things. I think Sam Reed is fantastic as Lestat. I think he's wonderful in this.
You don't think he's annoying?
What? I don't love the tone of this. It has to be said. But it's not, I mean, because I do struggle with these tonal shifts. I like my shows to take themselves a little bit more seriously. But the thing I will say is this is the framing device. The story is Lestat's history. And you don't really get into that until the second episode. And even then, it takes until the third episode for it to kind of kick off in earnest. So it front loads a lot of this rock stuff, which I think will put some people off, certainly.
There is an extended urinal scene.
There is,
which made me feel physically sick. I was like, why am I... And then he's explaining why vampires...
need a wee.
Wee differently, and they don't, however much they wee. And I was like, I don't give a shit about this. And then on it labours on vampire urine going down the urinal. I'm like, I was like, this is my life. My life is draining before my very eyes watching this show. The only other thing that I thought, oh, that's fun, is when he mentions that there's feminine products in the hotel called Vampons. That was that. That's it. That, if there was one redeeming feature, it's when they mention tampons, because that is funny.
I know why you have issues with it.
But if you break this down scene by scene, right, you will hate... I'm so surprised you find this enjoyable.
Boyd and... The vast majority of the critics, yeah, to be fair.
I think the level of acclaim it's got is wild.
Well, but again, I'm not sure you can judge it at this stage, because you've said this many times. The first episode here isn't hugely representative.
The whole series has gone out already.
I'm saying from your perspective, because you've only seen the first one.
This is going to have to. I read some of those reviews, and this is going to have to climb, get a lot.
Everest.
And also, in the second episode, when we start seeing Lestat's childhood, it still maintains a very different tone to Interview with the Vampire. It still maintains a heightened tone, which is slightly satirical.
I can see why Interview with the Vampire, the first two series, were so highly acclaimed. I just think the critics have slightly lost it when it comes to this one. But equally, it's not by any means terrible.
It is by every means terrible.
This is the new Widow's Bake.
It's 100% not Widow's Bake. There's no way that it is.
Take against Widow's Bake like this.
I've really taken against this. And I would love someone to tell me, not either of you, I would love someone to tell me why they think this is good.
I'm going to watch the rest of this. So once I've finished it, I will report back.
You must have seen
all of them.
Yeah, but you've seen enough.
I've seen three,
yeah.
but it's only just really starting to get going.
But you don't think it's terrible?
No, I think it's great. But also,
you think it's great?
See,
yeah,
it's great.
If I were reviewing it at this stage, I'm currently in the 4-star camp, not the 5-star camp. But I'll see where it goes from here. But I also recognise, as someone who is personally quite sensitive to tone, and that's one of the things that I took against Widow's Bay for its stupid tone. I do
stupid tone.
Well, no,
stupid tone.
No, in the first episode, I did take it. Look, I learned to love Widow's Bay and the tone, but the tone of this doesn't sit 100% comfortably with me, and I can totally get if I wasn't already a little bit in the tank for it, because I love the first two seasons, I love the book, so I'm already a little bit keyed into it. The tone did rub me up the wrong way a little bit. I've kind of got a little bit accustomed to it as I go into episode three, and I much prefer the kind of like reminiscent stuff rather than the modern day rock stuff. But this will... You know, if I imagine what this is going to do, it won't just be this season. It'll be the Vampires of Stat, and then you've got to go into Queen of the Damned as well.
Oh,
so there's going to be tons of backstory and history, but you're also then going to go into then what, quote unquote, happens in the real world.
4 stars.
Yeah.
4? Are you joking,
no,
James?
No, I'm not. It's really good.
Listen, I love Vampire Diaries as much as the next person, but Jesus.
I think it's pretty good.
No, you're just saying that.
I'm genuinely amazed that this is the show you hated. We should have done a guessing game.
Yeah.
If you'd have asked me at the beginning of the show when we revealed that you hated one show this much, I would not have guessed this one.
My money was on the one that's literally called Furious.
I think this is a solidly well-made... You know, I watched, and it's an interesting, I think this novel, by the way, I think I remember with her son, Christopher, kind of carried on the...
No, well, no, the, I know he didn't the series, do this. But that, I mean, she's written like tons of these.
But he picked up he carried on writing some of these books,
didn't
he?
Yeah, some of her stuff.
Because I think
right,
I
that's much
you should have left them where they were.
Anyway. I digress. That was
to be fair to you, Steph. The books do go off the rails. Like, I would say, once you get past Taylor the Body Thief, I'd give up personally.
I've given up on this.
No, I enjoyed it. I did by and large enjoy it with the massive flaws of the too much narration and the music.
I don't think you can say you really enjoyed something if you are admitting that it has massive, massive flaws.
No, because it's not all... Because if you take out the
but
songs...
But the music is such a massive part of it.
We're both overusing the word massive.
I know, I can't stop saying it now.
It doesn't completely destroy the entire show. No, it doesn't. It's just...
Everything else destroys the show. Everything.
Well, I think the rest of it is pretty decent.
Pretty good.
Steph's opinion on this has literally broken the studio, and I'm enjoying this enormously.
You're amazed that I quite like it. I'm amazed that you hate it level of venom. Bottom line, it's well made. The production values are pretty good.
That does not a good show make to have great production values. Let's just talk about it. I mean, we could talk about flipping, whatchamacallit, Waterworld thingy, Westworld, whatever it was.
I really like Waterworld.
Right, okay, so
you mean Westworld the show?
Westworld the show, okay.
Great show.
That's had high production values. People hated it.
Yeah, but they were wrong. It's great.
Well, the original first couple of seasons of Westworld were highly acclaimed.
That does not a good show make. Like, technical brilliance does not a good show make.
You're right. But technical brilliance can help a show.
It doesn't help it here, though.
Well, I think it does help it here.
It doesn't.
Quite a lot. Because I think it's... No. Anyway. But I'm amazed that you hate it this much. I'm genuinely surprised.
And I'm just going to let you know that I phoned Kay and she was like, oh, God.
Oh, she definitely
like,
wouldn't have liked it.
That fucking vampire show. And I was like, yeah. I said, yeah, can you believe it? I had to phone her because I was so angry about watching it. I was like, oh, my God, we're watching this terrible show. And she would agree with me. Just saying.
Well, this genuinely has surprised. Yeah. Even though Kay dropped a vampire emoji into the chat, I thought she was guessing. Yes. I still didn't think it was this show.
Why would you not think it was this show? It's awful.
Well, there are so many things wrong with the next show that we're going to review that I assumed you'd take against that. But,
yes.
Right.
Let's
move
on.
Interview with the Vampire then. I don't know what you're going to make of that.
But... BBC Two.
Yeah.
By the way, I was going to mention, it's interesting. It is a BBC. BBC have got this deal with, who makes it?
It's AMC.
AMC, because they showed Interview with the Vampire first.
And it finished last week, and then obviously now it comes.
And now you can watch the whole thing
on BBC.
All episodes. You can binge.
You can binge it, Steph.
On the basis of this show, I'm going to be asking for my license fee.
Well,
I'm just saying.
I mean, fair enough. Some of your license fee has gone on acquiring this show.
Yes, from AMC.
You have paid for this.
Yeah.
And you can see it all in full from the BBC on the iPlayer from Tuesday, the 28th of July, 9 o'clock, and live on BBC Two that evening. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to get into this because I will try and watch all of it while I'm away, and then feedback.
Oh, no, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I'm going to watch more of it as well.
Just to spite you.
Yeah.
I really
I want to see this breaking the fourth wall.
It does. When he's in the thing. Yeah. Don't make me watch it again. God damn it. Just to prove a point.
Anyway, next up, we have the show that I thought had elicited rage from Steph because it's literally called Furious on Disney+. This is created and written by Elizabeth Merriweather of New Girl and the Dropout fame, and this sees Emmy Rossum as an FBI agent on the trail of a female serial killer. Now, as I said, I had a strong suspicion that this would be the show that set Steph off. Clearly, I was mistaken, but in addition to the vampire stat, did this make you furious?
Oh, this was shit as well. Oh, my God.
So they're two in one.
Yeah, but no, this is nowhere. Like, I'd rather watch this than that.
No.
This has got so many of those kind of really tired... woman, like detective finding serial killer tropes. I mean, look, don't get me started on her hair for one, you know?
She has curly hair.
I really like Emmy Rossum, but when she's making when she's doing anything that's seemingly unreasonable, the wild hair comes out. It's like, Jesus. And when she's in All Official, she's tying the hair and she's slicking it back on. Like, just that kind of stuff just feels so tired. Sorry, anyway, have you explained what this is about?
I mean, more or less. So Lola Pettigrew plays the serial killer.
Yeah. Oh, God. This is... Right.
There's not a lot of singing in this one, there's
that. The problem with this... Okay, yeah, there's many problems with this. Emmy Rossum's hair, for one, okay... Scoot McNairy's in it, and you ruined him for me with Man on Fire because now I'm like,
you're just waiting for him to be the real killer, aren't you?
I'm waiting for him to be dodgy. yeah, the girl that's... Right. When you've got someone who's slightly psychotic, okay, who is completely psychotic, like the serial killer in this is psychotic, there's got to be something like kind of kooky or interesting about them. And this girl just is sort of a bit boring, a bit of a boring psychopath. Do you know what I mean? She's just kind of a blonde psychopath that employs wigs and she like manipulates.
She brought red hair.
Yeah, she employs wigs and she manipulates people with her sexual prowess. I mean, stop me if you've heard it before because we have.
I'd describe her, she's an annoying serial killer.
Oh, she's massively irritating.
But when you have male serial killers, and this isn't always the rule, but oftentimes they're portrayed as in some way charming, but you see like a hint of like a shadow of, oh, actually there's something. She is so obviously villainous to anyone who even walks past her. Like, it's so dialed up.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they're doing that because she's a female serial killer, they need to make her completely batshit.
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking about any of this, really. There's loads of kind of unbelievable elements to it, and just even the way that she tracks down all these men, and the serial killer finds her, so she needs to find work, and then she gets to all these. I don't want to give away the spoiler of why she's serial killing all these people, because probably you won't care and you won't watch any more of it because it's not very good. But yeah, it's predictable. Even the Emmy Rossum's got a. Her character's got a backstory, and the backstory is she was working on the force, but something happened.
Yeah.
And when she comes back, all the police officers to the crime scene, they're all like, fuck you. And it's just so tired. It's not as good as a single episode of a police procedural. And that, do you know what's really good? The artwork on it. Like Emmy Rossum's face, the artwork for it is lovely.
Oh, you mean like the adverts?
Yeah, but it makes it look like it's good and it's not.
That's the whole point. Yeah.
That's the nature of marketing, isn't it?
marketing, great show.
Marketing, 5 stars. content, 1. I don't even. Yeah. I can't even. Do you know what? It was also so boring. I can't even think of any good. It's really boring, isn't it?
I agree. They've really fucked this up. Which is why this was my favorite for you.
Same.
Because it's a crime story, right? It's a serial killer. And by the way, serial killers are back, right? Because you've got The Dark, which are the aforementioned Dark on ITV, which we reviewed recently. The Shards coming up is a serial killer story, the Bret Easton Ellis show. And there's another one that I can't think of recently. Anyway, this is a new mini revival of the serial killer thriller, which I am fully in favour of because I like the serial killer.
Yeah, I love
thriller.
A serial killer.
But you know a show, you know a film or a serial killer film or TV show is going the wrong route when you have a moment, which this does have, where one of the characters says to the other, you know what we've got on our hands here is a serial killer.
It's
like, we understand. That's the premise of the show. Yeah. We know there's a serial killer within the first 10 seconds. You don't have to. And I thought that summed up that no one in this production team, not one of the writers in the writer's room or none of the showrunners, no one,
show
the
don't
actor,
tell.
Say, don't have that line. It's awful. It's cheesy. It's terrible.
Yeah. Every scene with Scoot McNairy's like, I can't even look.
All of the interrelations, but the woman who she meets halfway through, who then introduces...
Head of the sex crimes division,
is irrationally furious with her for no reason whatsoever, but then totally goes the other way. And then she's like practically in love with her after about 10 seconds. The scenes with Scoot McNairy are just... so cliche and embarrassing. And then when there's a revelation about what she likes to do.
Yeah.
The main detective of the show. And I thought that was so kind of cheap and lame attempt to try and be outrageous and provocative, right? It's trying to be provocative by having, a female serial killer. And of course, they're vanishingly rare anyway. Yeah. And of course, it's based on a film called Black Widow, which they actually mentioned in the title sequence. And the creator said, she was watching Black Widow, this serial killer film from like the 90s or whatever, and thought, I could do something like that, and she has. Mm. But the idea that there are hardly any female serial killers, as crime queen, you would know.
But can I just go back, because I want to talk about that scene, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that I find is so fucking tired, I can't bear it, is you'll get a sex scene between a man and a woman, and then inevitably what will happen is the woman will have to get a vibrator.
Oh my God, I know. That's what I was about to say.
It's like, you can't satisfy me. Let me get my bright pink vibrator out and let's get someone to do the job.
That's what I'm saying. It's trying to be outrageous with vibrators and, you know, edgy sex scenes and which aren't sex scenes. And sometimes the dialogue is a little bit edgy as well, but it's so contrived. I've used that C word. This is my favorite.
No, but you're right.
But it is. And it's literally like you feel like, someone's gone, FX, whoever made it, has gone, let's do a female serial killer thing. A bit like Killing Eve. Think about, because Killing Eve, I know Villanelle in Killing Eve was a trained assassin, but she's still a serial killer as well.
Yeah.
And it used those serial killer tropes brilliantly. It played on them.
Yes.
And the whole cat and mouse thing between the hunter and the hunted, this is trying to do the hunter and the hunted thing. And it's so lame. It's so, you don't believe in the serial killer character for one second. No. And as I said, you were grasping for what word can you use? She's just annoying.
She's boring.
To have a serial killer be boring is quite an achievement.
It is
because
quite an achievement.
She takes eight. There's a whole scene with Rob Delaney.
Oh,
you know,
why?
Rob Delaney.
I love Rob
from Catastrophe, right? And he gets this terrible role to play. They drag that scene out so long to the end of your tether, and you're like, this whole story could be done in 4 episodes, and you've given it however many, 8, I think at least. It's too long. It's too cliched. It's trying too hard all the way through. It's a massive failure. It's a massive letdown because yeah. I was looking forward to it. And that's why I thought this was the show you hated.
Do you know
how wrong could I have been?
No, I do hate it.
To the extent to which you hate the Vampire the Stat.
No, nothing could come that close. But yeah,
Vampire the Stat is much better than this.
Okay, whoa.
We have 9 minutes left of the show before we get thrown out of the studio. Okay. And another, so I'm going to say, let's...
Did you hate it?
Yes, it's terrible. Okay. For all the reasons you say, I thought this would have enraged you because the tropes and the way it tries to depict a female serial killer, I thought it would rub you up the wrong way.
Oh, it really has.
Catastrophically.
It really has.
Yeah. I think Emmy Rossum is genuinely good in this.
Yeah, she is good.
I think she's the only good thing
Absolutely.
In this.
She's really good. Hair on, whatever you think of her hair, she manages to sell the idea that she is doing what she's doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
They lucked out.
And
with
she's
her.
Exec producer. I thought, well, that makes sense because you've made sure your role is brilliant, or at least it gives you the juicy stuff to do, which you believe in, but everyone else in it is.
Brilliant is a stretch, I think. I mean, I like Emmy Rossum.
Yeah, brilliant is a stretch.
But
the
show is.
She's very good.
I will always have time for Emmy Rossum because I interviewed her when she did Poseidon. And when we got into the interview, I mentioned that I was hungry and she ordered me some chips.
Oh, wow, that is good.
Which I thought was brilliant. An extraordinarily nice thing to do. She gets a free pass from me always.
She's a delight. I've watched a lot of interviews with her.
Yeah,
I knew I was going to watch this. And she is absolute delight. She's wonderful. This podcast could be called Actors Who've Made Bad Decisions About Shows. Because that's how it feels.
Yeah, it's terrible. Don't watch it. Anyway, Furious, which made all of us exactly that,
it's
is on Disney Plus,
isn't it?
I know.
It's like, what do you expect? Furious.
When is it on, Boydie?
Oh, sorry. Furious is on Monday today, the 27th of July, Disney Plus.
Finally, this week, we have The Rapture, based on the book by Liz Jensen. And this sees Ruth Madeley as a psychologist, and she's working in a high-security hospital where she comes across a young woman who is currently sectioned for the murder of her mother, but who also claims to receive clairvoyant messages from the beyond. Now, Boydie, if we can get past the fact that Ruth Jones is also in this, making you horribly compromised by this whole endeavour, were you rapturous about this?
I was scared because of the whole the domination of the which show is Steph going to hate.
Thought it might be this.
I thought it could be, which I was pleased to let it be this. But I can see someone taking against it because there's a lot going on in this. Because you've got this mad young woman, mad in heavy quotes. You've got this young woman who's incarcerated for killing her own mother, which she vehemently denies she does, but she's clearly like not quite right. And then you've got the new shrink arriving in this institution who decides to take it upon herself to talk to this young woman because she thinks she can bond with her. And I find sometimes, and this isn't the case here, I'm just talking about in general, that kind of, you know, Hannibal Lecter talking to Jodie Foster kind of vibe, you know, you're interviewing someone scarily dangerous and she has to have, that main character, Bethany, has to have a security guard with her at all times because she's so dangerous.
With her nurse, it's her head nurse that she has with her.
Okay. Isn't security as well?
No, he's an orderly.
That's
fairly common, I think.
I've got to start taking notes.
Rafiq,
Then Ruth Bader's character arrives to intriguingly sort her out. Then you've also got the fact that her dad, the young woman's dad, is the head of a weird religious
he's a cult
Christian
leader.
Cult. And he's really creepy and horrible, played by Sam Hazeldine. And then you've got a journalist who's so alcoholic that he literally cannot stop drinking in every single scene, played by Iwan Rion, who, by the way, I did a thing with last week, and he's a really lovely guy.
I love him.
He's brilliant. How was he involved somehow? He was investigating the cult, and is he investigating the 70-year-old girl who may or may not have killed a thing? And then in the end, you're like, there's a big, is it or isn't it supernatural? Is she doing these weird drawings, the 17-year-old girl, to mean anything, or are they just kind of figments of her imagination that she's drawing? Or, in fact, is everything happening in this show leading to the rapture and the apocalypse and the end of the world as we know it?
Yes.
That is a lot. But I have to say, they pulled it off. Mm-hmm. I think they really pulled it off. And I think the detail all the way through, this is one, you know, I go back to my judgment of shows, which is if I believe in the first few minutes that this could actually happen, and Ruth Madeley sells it so well, you believe she is a forensic psychologist, you believe the scenes with Ruth Jones as her shrink work really well as well. But you believe the premise, even though it is quite far out there, and by the end of it, it's way far out there, but it does a very clever job of slowly building to the point where you're reaching a level of hysteria in terms of the possibilities that this is detailing of the end of the world by the end of the thing. And how topical is it, by the way, that we're watching this show, which features a scorchingly hot heat wave in our scorchingly hot heat wave. And I thought that is kind
that
of helping.
Crazy.
It feels, it's almost the opposite of The Dark, which felt too cold and wintry. This feels perfect.
Oh, it's definitely a summer show.
And it literally, to the point where it's shimmering, they've got this, every single outdoor show is like, has a shimmering effect to show just how fucking hot it was. So I was fully on board. I love Richard Madeley. I love Ruth Madeley. Yeah. She's no relation to Richard. I think she's brilliant. You'd have seen her in Doctor Who. She's in lots of excellent shows. She's brilliant. This is a great lead role for her, and she pulls it off magnificently. I'm really enjoying it, and I will absolutely carry on watching it to the end, because I want to know how it all plays out.
Yeah, this is a great example of how, you put it brilliantly, you can throw so much a show and not pull it off, but they've thrown so much of this, and they've absolutely, this is fantastic. Oh. Ruth Madeley's incredible. If I'd had more time, I would have watched all of these. This is a show I would have watched every single one, because
I didn't see this coming. You really are surprising us on everyone this week.
I was completely, I believed in every character. I was completely, I love anything with a cult in. That's kind of my bag. I do love a cult.
You love a good cult. Yeah.
I do love a cult. I think you're right. Ruth Madeley is so sensational and believable. And I think she underplays, I know you've made mention of the Silence of the Lambs thing, but I think she underplays that role, psychotherapist role so well. It's so unbelievable. And the only thing that I slightly found annoying about it was the point where she has to, you know, where the visions are coming to her, and, you know, she seemingly does just a couple of waves of her Bic pen, and then you get this masterful drawing. That is really nitpicky. That is ridiculous. I thought it was really original. I found it thrilling, and also it made me a bit scared, because I was like, oh, it's perfectly positioned, I think, to not be too outlandish, to be like, oh, actually, this could happen. I should also quickly
mention Jack Farthing's in it. Jack Farthing, who normally plays kind of psychotic, quite villainous people, he plays, seems to be playing a really nice guy. But who knows, in the first episode at least, who's kind of like romantically attracted to Ruth Madeley's character.
Yeah, but that I love. I think this is kind of expert mystery building for me. Yeah. That's what I really liked about it.
I feel like James isn't quite on board.
No, I mean, I expert is a big word. It's fine. It's decent.
Mystery building. It's
okay. I quite liked it.
I can now not take anything you say seriously, because you are a vampire Lestat lover. And I just can't.
I'm accusing you of being a vampire.
Because you are a vampire.
As a vampire apologist, you will not take my opinion on this. That's fair. That's entirely fair. No, I thought it was decent. I got much more engaged with it when the supernatural stuff, or may not be, started to assert itself. I quite enjoyed that. I just think that to have those kind of scenes, those Silence of the Lambs scenes, where you're having someone face off against someone who is scary, and it's about the shifting power dynamics and whatnot, they're really hard to pull off convincingly. And I think this is quite hit and miss with those. I think it's okay, but also it feels a little bit laid on, a little bit thick at times, and not quite going forward enough. They were a bit mixed for me. But by the end of the first episode, most of my reservations were put aside. And I was like, you know what, this is actually pretty good. I can get on board with this. So I did it, but I would not call it Expert mystery building.
Thank you, Boyd. Thank you.
Journeyman mystery building.
No.
I think it's really well done. And it's not just because I'd watched 2 hours of utter shit before I watched this.
Okay, well, that is The Rapture, and it is on BBC One.
It started yesterday, Sunday the 26th. I think it's on again tonight, and I think it'll be on iPlayer in full.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say, all you vampire people, come for me. I don't mind. I don't mind. Please say
suck anything you like.
You will be wrong, but I will hear it.
It's the new Widow's Bay. It is.
It's 100% not.
What else is out this week, Boydie? We missed?
We've got Gomorrah, The Origins.
Yes.
On Sky Atlantic, and now on Tuesday, the 20th of July, 2026. Gomorrah, of course, absolute classic original crime show, and I watched a bit of this, and I think it looks really good, actually. There is Benidorm is Murder, which is a cozy crime thing set in Benidorm with John Hannah as a bar owner who's also becomes an investigator into crimes.
And don't bother.
I'm just going to show you the cover of Total TV Guide. Look, that is the picture of him they chose to use on the cover. I mean, he just looks dreadful, doesn't he? Terrible hair.
I can't believe you're coming for John Hannah.
Sorry.
You're right there.
Yeah, I just don't think. I think that was an error. Then what else have we got?
And they chose that for the cover. That show for the cover.
Well,
I'm not with the cozy crimes.
I think that. Oh, I think that might be about it.
Lioness Season 3 on Paramount Plus on Sunday.
Sunday, you're right. And do you know what? Finally, the new series of Van der Volk is on ITV on Sunday as well. And I had the funniest moment of the week for me was when I was Kay previewed it for me for Heat Magazine, the new series of Van der Volk. And in the middle of it, she referred to the character as Van der Volk. She thought the name was Van der Volk. And that made me laugh. It tickled me so much. I had to message her saying, you realise you've called Van der Volk Van der Volk. See, isn't it funny? Aww. It's the funniest thing I've seen today. So, yes.
Okay.
If you appreciate Van der Volk.
Van der Volk.
Van der Volk.
When it goes out on Sunday on ITV 8 o'clock.
Oh.
There you go.
Okay.
James,
what is our pick of the week?
Well, it's definitely
The Rapture. It's
Rapture. It's 100% The Vampire Lestat. You boy,
no,
know it.
No,
you
know it. Know it.
No,
I much prefer
98% of Rotten Tomatoes.
He doesn't know it. He knows it's The Rapture. The Rapture's
it's
really
the Rapture's,
good.
It's better.
Are you really?
Of course.
Do you really? Are you not just doing
only,
it to annoy me?
No, only one of these shows am I going to watch through, and it is The Vampire Lestat.
Yeah. He's a huge fan of this whole thing, so yeah.
I love vampires, but not this vampire.
No, he's not a huge fan of vampires. He's a huge fan of this particular iteration of vampires.
So you don't love vampires in general, you just love this stuff. You just love this show.
I like vampire shows. I like
vampire
films.
What shows do you like?
Well, there aren't there. I mean, to be fair, I have actually watched The Vampire Diaries.
The Vampire Diaries is great.
Yeah, so okay. I have actually seen that. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Enjoy
exactly.
that
Exactly, so you like...
I like a vampire, but I really like love Interview with the Vampire. I think the first two seasons are spectacular. Yes. And I'm willing to give this season the benefit of the doubt. And even thus far, I am, like I say, I'm already in the 4-star camp and I'm only 3 episodes in.
He gave the original series 5 stars. This is the next new series of the show he's given 5 stars
demented.
To.
It's demented.
I know.
It's demented. It's demented.
If you think I'm demented, do feel free to write in and let us know. It is postbag@pilottvpod.com. That is it for this week's show. Please do follow us on Instagram. Instagram specifically. No one, as I've said, is on Twitter anymore. So just come and follow us on Instagram. It is @JamesC Dyer, @Boyd Hilton, @Steph Seelan, @PilotTVPod. We could always use some more followers. Next week, stuff will be happening, but crucially, I'm not going to be here.
For God's sake.
So it's not really my problem,
Well, do you know what? Honestly, at this current moment, I feel like you and I need 2 weeks apart.
We need a break. We need a separation.
We need a serious break.
Hey, it was you and Boydie going at it over the vampire show.
I'm really getting angry with
I like
you
angry,
at the
Steph.
Like,
it's really
I don't
fun.
Know why are you just making me
it's
so
dark,
cross?
So, you know, Steph, I've got to say, you know, and I don't want to make you feel bad or anything, and I know we're on air and stuff, but I think you need to dial back on the coke a little bit because it's just making you quite angry.
Okay, I will.
Just, you know, the drugs.
Yeah.
You need to, I think you've got a problem.
Okay, all right, babe. Oh, God. Yeah.
The milk bottles are really getting to you.
The milk bottles are really getting to me.
Right, okay. So what they will be doing on Pilot Plus and indeed the regular show, who knows? I will be looking forward to listening as a punter.
You don't give a shit.
I do.
You could
I
not
always,
care less.
Always,
couldn't
always
care
listen
less.
To the show
throwing
when I'm
us
not
to
on
the
it.
Wolves.
Always. I look forward to it. When it drops, I listen to it.
Oh, we need to figure out who's going to do the post bag.
Yeah. I'll leave that in your capable hands. Okay. That is it from myself, from Boyd, and from a very, very angry Steph Seelan. Pilot out.